Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best: provide cancer updates, research, and education. Before listening to this podcast, please note that it contains a personal account of the 9/11 terrorist attacks in New York City that may be unsettling or triggering to some. Listener discretion is advised. Jerry Sanford dedicated his life to serving the citizens of New York City for more than 30 years, first as a police officer and then as a firefighter. After 29 years of service as a New York City firefighter, the last nine of which he served in the department's press office, Sanford retired in 1997. 3 years later, he and his wife would move to Naples, Florida to live out their retirement years. However, as he recalls, retirement life wasn't for him. Sanford found a second calling working at the North Naples Fire Control and Rescue District, which, coincidentally, would lead him down a path to returning to the city he served for more than three decades, one day prior to the devastating September 11th terrorist attacks. In honor of the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, Cure spoke with Sanford for this special edition of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast about the antique firefighter helmet that led him back to Ladder 42 in the Bronx on September 10th, 2001, as well as the immediate aftermath of 9/11 and why he volunteered to return to his old post in the press office. We also talk with Sanford about his several bouts of lung cancer, which may be attributed to his exposure to the air around Ground Zero, and what advice he would offer to others facing a cancer diagnosis.
We are coming up on the 20-year anniversary of 9/11, so tell me about that day and any reflections that you have.
Well, it's kind of heavy. You know, every year, you know, we all know where we were on that terrible day almost 20 years ago. And in fact, I flew out 2 hours before the attack. I was in LaGuardia Airport and I flew out and I was changing planes in Pittsburgh when I was called to a television and I saw for the first time what had happened, that a tower was on fire. And at first I didn't comprehend. I thought it was a sightseeing plane or something. But then we got thrown off the plane and it was pandemonium in the airport. And we then quickly tried to get a car and get out of Pittsburgh. And then we found out by listening to the radio that in fact the second plane had hit the second tower, Shanksville, and the Pentagon. So it's a very heavy day for, especially now with the In fact, just 2 weeks ago, my lady, Chris, and I, we returned to the Bronx. We went back to where the helmet is now. And that was it's been 20 years since I took the helmet back there. And it was very nostalgic standing there in the same spot where a number of my fellow firefighters, including Father Judge, our Catholic chaplain, that was the last mass that he said was the morning of September 10th, because a number of my brothers that were there were all killed like 20 hours later.
Yeah, it's a very heavy topic. And you were can you go into more detail about why you had flown to New York on that day? I know you mentioned a helmet, but just a little bit more detail there so that readers and listeners can be more aware of, you know, why you were in the location at that time.
The firehouse had been undergoing renovation. And when I found the helmet and I called the fire commissioner, that was his old firehouse, he said, I'd love to have you bring it back, but it won't be until 2001. So a year passed and we flew up on September 8th to New York. And I took them to where I worked all over the city. And then the morning of September 10th, we were back at Ladder 42 for the rededication ceremony with the mass and giving the helmet back and all that ceremonial stuff that went on that day. And that's what placed me from Naples back to the Bronx on that day.
All right. And how old were you around that time?
I was, I'm 83 now. So let's do the math. I was 63. Okay. I don't feel 83. I feel 63.
Amazing. So then why? So of course, you know, you've written a book, you've published a book now. So tell me more about it. Why did you decide to write the book? What can readers expect?
Well, my lady, Chris, we've been seeing each other now for 6.5 years. And unbeknownst to me, while I was speaking to her about all my stories we traveled to New York a lot. She was secretly recording them on her phone. And this past January and February, she sat down and she said to me, if you can be quiet for a little while, you're a very noisy man. And I have to, I have to get something out of the cloud, like I know what the cloud is. And she beautifully typed 12,000 words into this book that's called It Started with a Helmet. And that's an appropriate title because it started in Naples, Florida. You know, how did a helmet from New York City get from the Bronx to Naples and from Naples back to the Bronx? And the book is all about that. It's a very slim novel, but it categorizes my little bit of my life when I was a police officer and my story about 9/11 and then what happened. What did I do after 9/11? I stayed up there for many, many weeks. I went back into the press office because that's what I knew best. I would have gladly gone down and helped dig for survivors, but I felt I was better. I could better help my job by going back to the press office. And that's what I did.
All right. And how quickly did you go back? Because I know you said you were on your way back home, correct? On 9/11, or were you on your way? Yeah. So how quickly did you turn around to go back to kind of...
I went back up. My wife and I had previously purchased tickets to go to Philadelphia for our grandson's christening. And so we flew up, I think it was a Friday when the FAA allowed flights to again fly. So we flew to Philadelphia and the christening, I believe, was Sunday afternoon. And right after that, I was able to reach Brooklyn and reached the fire commissioner. I told him I was in Philadelphia and I was coming back to help. And he was very happy to get all the help that he could get. And the job was just tore apart. We had lost so many men from so many different ranks. So my value was I could go right back and deal with the media. You know, when you can deal with the New York City media, you can deal with anybody. I don't care where you are. So I didn't have too much of a problem.
Yeah, are there any specific memories? I'm sure that was all really, you know, that was definitely very difficult going to some of these funerals where I'm sure you probably knew some of these first responders that you were going to the funerals of, and then also trying to keep the media at bay so that the family and friends were able to pay their respects and mourn appropriately. So are there any memories that you specifically have that kind of still stick with you to this day from that time?
Well, I knew about half of the men that were killed that day. I worked after 30 years. I knew them, or I worked with them, and it was very difficult going to their wakes and funerals because, you know, it's a hard thing to put into words, you know, because and then the families, meaning the wives and that I knew, you know, I mean, it wasn't just, you know, I had worked with them in my old companies and. Christmas parties, picnics. I mean, you know, so it was very, I had that closeness, you know, we're called a fire family, you know, no matter where you go, you're part of the fire family, you know, and that was very, very difficult. None of them stand out except they all stand out. You know, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. You know, it was a time none of us ever experienced, you know, I never, you know, when I got back there on Monday, that was 6 days after the attacks, and I'm standing 40 to 50 feet in the air on West Street, looking down at firemen that look and rescuers that look like the size of ants, and I thought it was a movie set. I thought, wait a minute, this can't be New York City. This can't be where I served for 30 years, and it was just a horrible experience seeing that. But you know what? You have to do it. You got to pull up your pants. You got to get out there and you have to do it. And because you know what? They would have done it for me. And that's why I was there. Because the brothers, we don't leave anybody behind, you know? And we get in there and we, as the thousands of people are exiting the World Trade Towers, we're going in. So I'm very proud that of the role, my small role. Everybody played a role that day. Everybody has a story, but I'm very proud of that I was able to come back to New York and help.
Of course, later on, you received a diagnosis of lung cancer. So what was it like being diagnosed with lung cancer after everything else had gone on?
Well, it was every year, the fire department, that I was working for the North Naples Fire Department, and every year we have a medical. But I just like to put this in, at the same time, my wife Maria was battling breast cancer. Okay, so let's just put, so now I go down for my medical, you know, the usual thing, chest x-ray, blood pressure, they take blood and all. And that was, I think, June or July of 2007. So the nurse called me and said, Mr. Sanford, you better come down. The doctor wants to see you. So I go down to the hospital and he takes the x-ray of my chest x-ray. And he says, look, I want to show you. Look, this is red. This is red here. And red. I think red. What is that? He says, you have, it looks like the indication that you have lung cancer. I said, lung cancer? How could that be? You know, I'm not even putting the center. I mean, I'm not bleeding. I'm not coughing. I'm not sneezing. I am in good health. And well, it turns out I went and I had a number of tests or biopsies and all, but I did it all without telling anyone. I didn't tell my family. I didn't tell our children because their mother was fighting the demon, the devil. And then I realized that I had to that the sooner I had surgery to remove the cancer, the better off I would be. But she couldn't travel to the immediate cancer center I thought of was Sloan Kettering in Manhattan. But she was in no way that I could put her through it. But anyway, I met her. I had heard through the grapevine that one of the firefighters I worked with had gone up to Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, Florida. And that's the closest cancer hospital to us down here in Southwest Florida. So anyway, I found out the name of a thoracic surgeon. And finally, that I guess it was September, August, September, I finally told Maria. And she was, you know, she was strong. She's a very strong woman and said, don't worry, Jerry, we'll get through this. So I said, well, we're going to Moffitt. And she had never heard of Moffitt. And so in December of 07, I had what's called adenocarcinoma in my right upper lung. And so they successfully removed that cancer. And then 2 months later in February of 08, I had the same thing in my left lower lobe. And they successfully removed that cancer. And at the time, the doctors, the surgeon said, we got it all. I said, well, what about chemo or radiation? They said, no, you're okay. Oh, okay. So I thought that was a little, I thought that I would follow up with chemo radiation. But I went every year after that to my oncologist and I had my CAT scan every year and everything was fine. 2009, 10, 11, now 2012, I go back to my doctor again and he has my CAT scan and I go in to see him. He goes, oh, Jerry, I have a little bad news for you. What's that, doc? He goes, your cancer came back. So now it came back for the second time in the middle of my chest. And this time he said, you're going to need extensive chemo and radiation, which I did. I had a lot of both, and which I started, that was almost all of the spring into June of 2012. And, but it was kind of remarkable, Antonia. They gave me all kinds of pills and stuff, but God is good. I never got sick. And the treatment doctor was right next door to the firehouse where I worked. So I would say to the girls, I'll be right back. And I'd walk out the back door through the hedges, across the parking lot, and I'd go into the radiation center. And I had that whole thing I'd put on me and I'd got my radiation treatment, you know? So I have to say, up to this moment, I'm cancer-free since 2012. I go every year I'll be going in November. Before you know it, wow, I can't believe we're September already. I'll be going back to the doctor, and I get my CAT scan every year. And hopefully he says to me, I'll see you next year. So God has been very good to me, you know, been through a lot. I just went through this last year and a half with some stomach trouble. It wasn't COVID related, but because of the COVID, I couldn't get in to a hospital. I was going to have a procedure in my stomach that we're going to take a look. They couldn't even take a look at it because you weren't allowed into the hospital. But now I'm happy to say I'm doing well. I've lost some weight, but I'm 83 years old. And hey, if that's what it is, I'll take it. You know, I take a lot of pills during the day, but it's I'm feeling good, and I'm very active. I'm out. I help with veterans. I help at a food pantry during the week, and with this beautiful book that we wrote, that keeps us busy also. But I'm involved in a lot of organizations, and I feel being positive. All these years, I was always positive. I never, you know, I saw how strong Maria was. In fact, she passed away in 2009. I lost her in 2009. And but you have to stay strong. You know, you can't let it get you down. You know, like I said before, pick up your pants and get out there and get involved and help people. You know, my mother used to say, Gerald, it doesn't cost anything to be nice to people. And I followed that all my life. And up to this moment, I'm involved with veterans. Today, I'm going to a school. And I'm going to put my dress uniform on, and I'm going to go speak at a school about 9/11. So I'm involved. And I mean, it would be very easy to just crawl up on the couch and say, oh, poor me. But no, that's not Jerry. I'm never going to do that. I'm always going to. And if I had advice to your listeners out there, do something, you know, and like each other, like somebody, you know what I mean? 20 years have passed, and there's a big change in the world in 20 years, you know? And so let's try to get back to the way we all felt, you know, 20 years ago, getting back to my experiences, 9/11, every day I'd take a film crew down to the site, and on West Street, we would ride by, and there were thousands of people, strangers, never saw them before, never saw them after, with big signs screaming, USA, USA, and thank you. I mean, we all came together as one neighborhood. You know, everybody was a New Yorker 20 years ago, helping everybody. So I don't mean to go off on a soapbox, but yeah, just try to be positive. Don't let your disease or your illness. And you know, there's so much help out there now. It's amazing in the 20 in all these years. But on the sad side, we keep losing firefighters and police officers every day from something that happened 20 years ago, from that cloud, that terrible cloud that we ingested, including myself. It took 6 years for them to detect it in me. So just be strong. I guess that's what I wanted to say.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.